This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for others joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg. Richard Pollock will join us in a couple of minutes. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. And of course, we start with what happened Monday night in Minnesota and then was improved upon last night in St. Louis. The Winnipeg Jets, two straight victories. They are have them on the cusp of making the playoffs for the first time since returning to Winnipeg. Two straight shutouts for Andre Pavlik, Ezzy. Just tremendous, tremendous team efforts and individual efforts in the last two games for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, the last two games have really put the Jets in a good position to make the playoffs for the first time. The Jets 1.0, obviously, since 1996. And they really have been impressive performances, starting with Andre Pavlik, and he's getting much of the attention, and it's deserved. But the team has played very well in front of him as well. I know that yesterday there weren't many goals after Chris Thorburn got his goal in the first period, but
or any
exactly. Yeah. But they really have played well, and they went out on this road trip needing a couple wins minimum out of those three games, and they've already got two. And now they can really put themselves in a great position. If they win tomorrow, they're in, essentially.
Yeah, well, they are in. They are 2 points, either earning 2 points or Los Angeles not earning 2 points away from making the playoffs for the first time, as you said. You know, what strikes me the most is, you know, you look back at Saturday's game against the Vancouver Canucks, where the Jets had been on, you know, the mini losing streak where they'd lost the last couple games. And then they play that game against Vancouver, which was really a must-win game in my mind, and they successfully do so. But they do so in a manner in which Paul Maurice would not have, you know, not have liked. They didn't play the game he wants to see them play. And it almost seems like they got the victory there, and they got the boost of confidence from the victory there, but they acknowledged that's not the way we can do it. That's not the way we're going to be long-term successful. And they've really, the manner in which that they have shut things down in front of the net, and the manner in which they've kept things tight and tight checking and well played over the last two nights is what's almost as impressive to me as the results.
Yeah, you're right, and they're obviously division opponents and division wins, and the Minnesota Wild performance to me was really impressive. Not to take anything away from last night's game against the St. Louis Blues, but I thought the Winnipeg Jets against the Minnesota Wild were really impressive, and they really made it easier for themselves going
into St. Louis. Did you think they were more impressive on Monday night, or did you think that last night's game was more impressive for the Jets?
I thought the game on Monday was much more impressive, and yesterday I thought, you know, I mean, they're obviously a goal away from Paul Stastny, and that game is tied up. Mm-hmm. But, no, I mean, as a whole, though, both games, they played very well. I mean, these games were scratch and claw and don't give the other team much space, and that's what I thought they did. And I think that's what the Jets do when they're playing successfully. If you watch the Jets play and you want to compare them to last year, they use their speed much more effectively, and they really don't give the opposing team much time and space. And I really thought that was evident yesterday, and I thought it was more of a complete effort against the Minnesota Wild, and that's because your season's on the line. If you don't win that game against Minnesota, then you have to
run the table almost.
Right,
yeah.
And then you have to get some help, and they obviously got some help from Edmonton last night beating the LA Kings, but it's a situation right now where the Winnipeg Jets are really playing themselves into the playoffs, and they're really getting ready for the playoffs. And, you know, the goaltending from Andre Pavlik has been excellent, and really he's been excellent since the goal that was scored in St. Louis. We all remember that goal, and then Michael Hutchinson went in the next game, and then Andre Pavlik has really owned the net since then. But the Winnipeg Jets, you know, you're seeing a healthy team with the exception of Tobias Enstrom. Dustin Byfuglien's out, but it's a healthy group of forwards especially. And I think that they're rolling those lines and they're playing really well. And it's not just Chris Thorburn getting a goal on the fourth line, but it's, you know, the contributions. I thought the Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Drew Stafford line was excellent again. And, you know, it's really exciting. The job's not completed yet, Drew, but they're very close. And again, they can make it very easy upon themselves and not make that game on Saturday really be a all or nothing game by beating Colorado tomorrow night.
Richie, welcome.
Boys.
What were your thoughts on the Monday and the Tuesday performance for the Winnipeg Jets?
You guys put it well. I listened on the way here. But I thought, yeah, as he makes the point about the Scheifele, Wheeler, Stafford line playing well, to me, it's whoever plays with Blake Wheeler plays well. That really is the case. Mark Scheifele, what did he go? One goal in 20 games? Right before he got shifted over to the Wheeler line? Or thereabouts, like, you know, it was a few games after that. But the idea is, Look at Little and Ladd. I know Little comes back from injury, excuse me. They're not creating as many opportunities without Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler is driving the bus. And I think really has been for a long time. And he's getting some recognition now, which I think is deserved. But plays dynamic game, obviously the two breakaways. Mm-hmm. You're creating a lot, playing with speed, he's easy to play with because he can pass the puck well, skate big, all that stuff. He's been really impressive. But, you know, Andre Pavlik was apparently back to being quote unquote himself against the Rangers and all that.
Yeah.
And boom.
Two straight games, two straight shutouts when the season mattered the most.
In reality, you could say, guys, that Minnesota and St. Louis outplayed the Jets maybe by a bit, and the Jets won both games because of goaltending, and they outplayed Chicago and New York maybe by a bit. I mean, they lost. I'm not saying because of goaltending, but it's amazing how that can that goes.
One shot each way, and the narrative definitely changes. What I found impressive about the Jets' effort Monday and Tuesday from the defensive side is their ability to sort of keep everything to the outside.
They kept a lot to the outside. I mean, you had your chance Granlund on Minnesota there, and obviously, as you mentioned, the Stasny play.
Yeah.
And there were chances, but you did keep it to the outside. I tell you one thing. I agree with Ezzy about Minnesota being the more impressive win because St. Louis without Steen and Tarasenko, I mean, how do they create enough offense?
Well, it's been their problem they've had for the last number of years before Tarasenko really blossomed this year is the knock on them was where's their offense going to come from when they desperately need it?
Well, watching the game with Ezzy yesterday, Ezzy made the point about Steen and Tarasenko on the power play.
Yeah, it's to a certain degree. I mean, without Steen and Tarasenko, they scored 7 goals versus Dallas. So, I mean, this team can score goals, but certainly without those two players, you're missing two of your top offensive players. And Rich mentioned the power play. Steen plays the point, and Tarasenko is obviously a very dynamic player, fourth overall in the league in goals. But I think also you got to give credit to Ben Sherrod, who comes back from injury. He was out over a month, comes back, and he plays with Tyler Myers, and he's been very solid. He really has, and I think, you know, there's a reason why Paul Maurice felt comfortable not only putting him back into the lineup when Tobias Enstrom went out with an injury, but putting him on that top pair. So and it goes, you know, I if you were following me on Twitter, you would see me tweeting about Mark Stewart. I mean, Mark Stewart was excellent over the last two games, and you know, Mark Stewart's one of those guys that, you know, he seems to do whatever it takes to prevent goals. So his battles with Oshie yesterday were legendary, and he obviously drew a penalty, a double minor for high sticking. But you know,
it could have been headbutting. It could have if it was anything but the stick hitting him. But yes, drawing the penalty is the point of the matter.
I don't think there's any issue with the officiating the past two games. If anything, I thought the Jets have got the benefit of the doubt the past two games. So I think that probably puts to bed the conspiracy theory.
So you don't believe that Backes deserves any supplemental discipline for the play in front of Mark, the play in front of the net?
No, I don't.
I agree with you. I think that if people think that...
That's fine, but...
You can fine them, you're right, if they wanted to. But I mean, you know, I think people need to sort of realize that this is playoff hockey for all intents and purposes right now. And in the playoffs, the bar for what is considered a suspendable offense does, you know, go higher.
I think also, if the Stasny Myers play happens to the Jets, the station is filled up with calls for 3.5 days.
Well, that's naturally the way it's always going to work.
It goes both ways.
Yeah. I thought that, I mean, you know, was the Backes play dirty? Yeah, but I mean, but was it the most reprehensible thing I've ever seen on a sheet of ice? No.
Backes plays on the edge for sure.
Certainly does. Yeah. I mean, you know, the Reeves taking a piece out of Matthew Perreault, getting him with the high hit.
I didn't think that was anything. I thought that was blown out of proportion. You could take issue with the Oshie and in the back. This one far more to me than the Reeves play.
What I like from all that is the Jets' response to all that.
That's been, and as he pointed out, talking about the user's speed, it's the toughness too.
Mm-hmm.
They had many of the same guys here last year, but they didn't have the toughness. And Pomeroy says 100% instilled that in these players. I mean, Dustin Byfuglien, guys, I know he's not playing right now, but the physicality that he's displayed this year is more than the first, 3 years combined.
Sure. Well, I mean, it's a little less so now that as compared to when they had Evander Kane and Zach Bogosian. But other teams would come in and they'd see the Jets play for the first time, and you'd have opposing radio broadcasters, you'd have opposing journalists laughing at how physical the Jets were because they hit everything that moved. Little less so now that the season's gone on a little bit, but the St. Louis Blues, who are known for being big and mean.
I think the Jets match up just fine against those teams.
They gave them, punched them right in the face, and the Jets punched them back, if not harder.
Which is
good.
That's expected, though, at this point, isn't it? Like,
these are playoff games.
Yeah.
If you're going to wilt you're not the San Jose Sharks. What happened? Anytime the San Jose Sharks got punched in the face in the playoffs, they always wilted. Jets fans should be thrilled to see their teams shake it off and come back harder.
Thursday is the real first playoff game, though. Calgary, LA. That's the first real playoff game. Because, the Jets need to win to get in here. Minnesota theoretically needs to win, but
Minnesota's in. They've clinched.
Okay, so now, I'm saying last night's game.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
right?
Right.
St. Louis is trying to get, trying to jockey for first place. There's a different intensity when your whole season's on the line.
Right. And that'll be interesting. I mean, we'll talk about the playoff race coming up next segment, and we'll talk about we'll preview the Jets and the Avs again throughout the show today, but, you're this close. You've done all the hard work in your most difficult games. It'd be a shame to see it you lose focus. And the one thing that Paul Maurice has been very good at this year is ensuring the Jets haven't lost focus. For the most part, any of the so-called easier games on the schedule. I look back to that game in Edmonton a couple weeks ago on that Monday night, where the next night they were in Vancouver. They didn't lose focus. They took care of business in Edmonton, which we saw the LA Kings not do yesterday. And as a result, it might cost the Kings the rest of their season.
Yeah, obviously watching the Jets game, you didn't see a lot of that game. I saw the ending there.
Yeah.
If you're complaining about the Meyer, if you're complaining as a St. Louis fan about the Myers and Stasny issue, that Drew Doughty got hacked pretty good on kind of a partial breakaway to end that game. So I could see the Kings have, I know Drew Doughty has an issue with a lot of calls, but that's a huge, that goes without saying how significant that is for the Jets' chances. You win and you're in. You don't even need to win to get in, but
It's right there for the taking, so you might as well take it at this point.
And Colorado's awful, so tomorrow night should be the night that the Jets get back in the playoffs, and don't want to look too far ahead. We're going to talk about the playoff race. And Ezzy and I were talking about it last night, and the Jets end up in the Pacific Division, play Anaheim, who, I'm not saying you want to play Anaheim, but if you do beat Anaheim, and the other series is Vancouver-Calgary, you can start. I'm not joking. I'm being serious about this in terms of possibilities.
There's a path to going far in the playoffs.
The Jets are better than both Vancouver and Calgary. They're not better than Anaheim, but they're better than both Vancouver and Calgary. Does not mean they can't beat Anaheim, but they're not better on paper than Anaheim. They're better on paper than Vancouver and Calgary.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the entire Western Conference playoff picture. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We are live on TSN 1290, and this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey.
Not just by Illegal Curve.
By Illegal Curve. This is from last night's Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. This is Louis C.K.
I remember a few things exactly. I remember my daughter being born. I remember my dad spanking me. And I remember working at Rumors Comedy Club in Winnipeg.
Those are the three things I remember
really vividly. Worst and best things that happened in my whole life.
How cool is that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool last night. I was, all wound up after the Jets game. I was, had to, watch the Oilers and the Kings. I was getting ready to go to bed. And then my phone started blowing up with people telling me to go check out the clip of Louis C.K. on the Tonight Show last night.
Yeah, I saw that you tweeted that from the Illegal Curve account. I was very proud to hear Louis C.K. Louis C.K. is a really funny guy, and he has a show, I believe, too.
It's called Louie.
Louie, and I saw a couple episodes of that. Really good, too. It surprised me. It's not kind of your typical sitcom type of show.
No, definitely
but
not.
It was really funny, and that just shows you. I mean, the list of comedians, as I don't have to tell you this, Drew, mm-hmm. but the list of comedians that have played at Rumors, Jerry Seinfeld, we saw Rob Schneider there. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, Jon Stewart. You can keep going. Anyways, check it out online, rumorscomedyclub.com. Talk about the Western Conference playoff race after last night. And, I mean, you can't really say how big of a loss that was for the Los Angeles Kings to the Edmonton Oilers. You can't. There's not enough hyperbole you can use. It's all. I mean, inexcusable would be a good word for it.
I want to say something about the Los Angeles Kings because I like you guys.
I like you too, Ezzy.
that's good, Rich. I predicted that the LA Kings would be a playoff team this year, and why wouldn't you after winning their second cup in 4 years, right? And we had John Rosen, who's the LA Kings insider, on last week's midweek show, and I asked him the question, on the topic of, is this team tired, and is that really the problem this year? And, you know, he said, yeah, he agreed that could be one of the issues here. I mean, there's various issues here. Slava Voynov hasn't played most of the year. They miss Willie Mitchell. There have been injuries. Tyler Toffoli was injured earlier. Tanner Pearson's been out. List goes on and on. Dustin Brown's not having a good year. But to me, watching that team last night, they really do look tired. To me, and this team is not much different than the team last year. Look, Jonathan Quick still in net. Drew Doughty scored a goal from center. Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did.
He's still. I know Richie thinks he's the best defenseman in the NHL. And you know what?
He's probably the best player in the NHL.
If he's not the best defenseman or player, Rich, he's not far off. I mean, you know, you could throw out Shea Weber and some other defensemen, Duncan Keith, but. This team last night, I mean, it just doesn't. There's something about this team, and to me, a guy like Dustin Brown struggled. Obviously, Mike Richards was sent down to Manchester of the AHL and then recalled. He's had a tough year. Mm-hmm. There's just something about this team, and I know that you know we all expected, and they went on that run in early March, mid March, and what was it, 7 wins in a row, 8 wins in a row. But you watched them last night, and you have to win that game. And you're losing to an Edmonton Oilers team, with the exception of Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle and a few other guys. That's an AHL team.
Well,
and you got to win that. Yeah. And to me, you watch this team, and just the way they play as a group and their the sense of urgency. And I know that sense of urgency seems to be cliche, but you watch the Winnipeg Jets play the last couple games. I mean, this team is hard on pucks, winning those individual battles. And that really is what hockey is all about. Hockey is a team sport, but it's a collection of individual battles when there's not a lot of room on the ice. And you look at the LA Kings, and it's kind of a lackadaisical team.
They played four seasons in the past three.
I mean, there's still tons of skill there with Andrzej Kopitar and Justin Williams and Marian Gabrick. The list goes on and on. Toffoli's really fallen off here. Had a bit of a sophomore jinx. I really like him, but there's something about this team that the only thing that I can think of really is that they've played a lot of hockey, and this year, you know. It's just not there.
It's motivation too, guys. Let's be honest here. I mean, they want to win, but they know they've won two. They have an off year. They can come back next year. The core's together. I'm not saying they're resting on their laurels. I don't know for a fact, but it's just human nature as well. They've played so much, they're tired. They want a ton. Their drive is not there if they haven't won a cup before.
Sure, it's not. They know what it tastes like, they're not desperate to taste it. But if you watch that game last night, and what jumps out to me, and you know, as you talk about desperation and everything else, you know, it's not like they were the dominant team against Edmonton, and they ran into a goalie who made 60 saves. The Oilers, I mean. You could certainly say it was an even game.
I only saw the last 5 minutes.
I saw the last two periods of the game, or last period and a half. And you can certainly say it was an even game in the time that I watched, or that the Oilers even outplayed them. I mean, let's be honest. The Kings scored one legitimate goal.
Well, the truth is they played them last week, and they beat them, 7-2?
7-2.
Yeah.
The Kings scored one legitimate goal last night. The other goal, I mean, the second goal for the Kings was scored from center, which was a horrendous goal. I mean, you can't even say how terrible of a goal it was. But... you know, and granted the Oilers got the empty netter, but you just didn't feel that the Kings were desperate to keep their playoff hopes more than just faintly alive.
Right, and you know, we've talked quite a bit this year about some of the underachieving teams and whether their window's closing. The window is definitely not closing for the LA Kings. I can say that with 100% certainty, because you still have a lot of really good young players and players under contract, Rich. Not a question of that. You're right. I mean, this year, what's happened with the LA Kings is they got behind the eight ball, and they had to go on a late winning streak to just get back in it, and then they faded again. And, you know, it's a huge disappointment for this team, But next year you come back, and would any of us be surprised if they get into the playoffs and go on a long run next year? Probably not.
No, I would expect that if they end up missing the playoffs, and I mean they still, I guess they to some degree they still control their own destiny, but
they don't.
I know, but I mean if they win against Calgary tomorrow,
they need Winnipeg.
I know they still need the Jets to beat Calgary, but I mean if they beat they still have a decent chance as long as they beat Calgary tomorrow. Then it comes down to the one game.
But what if the Jets win and they're already in? And what if they're locked into a spot?
Well, but right, then they have that. Then the Jets would have nothing to play for against Calgary on Saturday night. I agree.
If technically speaking, if the Jets were to win and Minnesota were to win, the Jets would be locked in
at the second wild card spot.
If LA were to beat,
I'm not
Calgary.
Saying I wasn't
so
saying
if,
LA
if
can
I,
control
if I'm
their
Paul own. Maurice, I'm resting a bunch of guys.
Oh,
how many guys I have up right now?
We'll leave that for Saturday. But you're right. If the Jets win tomorrow, you certainly will see at least half a dozen regulars out of the lineup on Saturday.
As you should, yeah.
Drew.
As
it's,
you should.
It's a major uphill battle, and the game is in Calgary. And to me, a crazy stat, and we've seen this all year, the LA Kings have won 15 out of 40 away games. Mm-hmm. 15 out of 40.
It's terrible.
So, I mean, they've been awful on the road. They've been awful on the road all year. They lost in Edmonton last night. And, you know, it's got to be demoralizing, and it's going to be very tough for them to get in.
Let's point out a big thing, too. They have more regulation overtime wins than the Jets.
Sure.
Their goal differential is almost identical. There's one big factor here. 2-8 in the shootout.
Well, you get
that useless skills competition is going to cost them a playoff spot.
Yeah, but it's going to.
But it's rules for everybody. But I'm just telling you, it's the.
Of course, look. I mean, LA, like we said, LA
coaches come out after those. Sorry to interrupt you, but coaches come out, including Paul Maurice, after those and say, "I like the way we played. Doesn't matter what that result was."
Yeah, except that at the end of the year, it ends up mattering.
So they got to get rid of it.
Yeah, of course, I agree with you there. If you look at the top of the Western Conference, look at the Central Division. It's going to be a fascinating race for the playoff alignment. The top three spots in the Central Division. Each team with two games left. St. Louis, 105 points. Nashville with 104, and the Blackhawks with 102. The Blues, they have the Blackhawks and the Wild. The Predators, they have the Wild and the Stars, and the Blackhawks, they have the Blues and the Avalanche. So the top of the Central Division is still very much up in upheaval, and that's going to not be determined until Saturday.
St. Louis beats Chicago, they clinch.
If St. Louis beats Chicago tomorrow night, that's right.
Yep.
They would clinch. No, they wouldn't necessarily. Why can't Nashville can still jump over them?
Nashville can win two, as in they would jump.
Oh, that's true. They would. It would knock Chicago out.
The thing I want to point out here is: does it
matter?
I mean, you want to play Nashville? We probably think, although Nashville's a good team, guys. We shouldn't disregard their capabilities and certainly their goaltending. But so you finish first and you play Winnipeg or Minnesota, or you finish second and you play Chicago. I mean, you probably don't want to play Chicago, no matter how well Minnesota's played and the Jets are playing. You probably don't want to play Chicago. But it's not as if you're some kind of present here.
No, there is. You're right. I mean, there is no present for playing any team except for probably Vancouver and Calgary in the Western Conference playoffs, and they play each other.
And we keep saying that, and they keep winning.
Yeah, so you're right. You keep expecting them to keep battling.
We can talk all we want about all those teams, but Vancouver impressed me with their the Sedins in terms of obviously the way that they played. But you look at Calgary, and Calgary, you talk all about the defense and the guys getting attention and all that. Their first line has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Their first line is, it might be the top line in the game right now. You watched it? Have you watched that line move the puck? No line moves the puck any better than those guys right now. Huller, Monahan, and Gaudreau.
Oh. Well, they've been the best line pretty much. They've been on fire all year long.
As he brought up Huller on Saturday, he's 100% right about how good he's been.
Well, top 10 scorer in the NHL this year. I mean, and Monahan and Gaudreau.
Goal last night after they gave up
Hiller gave up the bad goal, and they come back minutes later. They don't let it. Nothing phases Calgary. I mean, it's really remarkable. I mean, you almost hope that Calgary makes the playoffs, given that they've come this far.
As a hockey fan, you hope that Calgary makes the playoffs because it's that good of a story. And it's probably going to cost, I don't think he'll care, of course. He won't care. Paul Maurice has Jack Adams trophy because Bob Hartley's going to take that one home if they make the playoffs. But you look at the roster and you watch them on a night-in, night-out basis. It's truly incredible what they've done, and they've been able to sustain it. They've dealt with the long trip during the Brier, injury to Giordano, the overall talent level. Goaltending hasn't exactly been dynamic. It's been unbelievable.
Well, remember when Giordano went down and everyone said, oh, that's the end of them. They're not going to be able to bounce back from that. And, I mean, they haven't missed a beat, really.
It's funny to think, though, everyone was looking at that last game of the season on Saturday afternoon between the Flames and Jets. What happens if the playoff seedings are decided by then? Do you just go out there and have a scrimmage?
You know what? Both teams would be glad. If Calgary takes care of business tomorrow, takes care of their own business, and the Jets take care of their own business in Denver tomorrow, both the Flames and the Jets would certainly be glad to make it, to let fans come down from the stands and play in that game on Saturday afternoon.
But the Flames, if the Vancouver were to lose their next game, the Flames could be playing for home ice in the first round.
Yes. Fine. There's still
something to play for.
Something to play for.
Last game seven, for sure.
Sure, that would be something to play for Calgary, but I mean, they certainly would be glad to take the pressure off. I mean, everybody for the last...
That game will mean something for Calgary regardless. Regardless, if they win, they'll be playing for home ice, and if they lose, they'll be playing for the playoffs. It's going to be a meaningful game.
And the Jets, I guess, could also still catch Minnesota too.
I actually don't.
Well, they can't though. If Minnesota wins the next game and Ezzy and the Jets win, then the tiebreaker means the Jets can't catch.
I'm just saying theoretically,
and Minnesota were to lose, yes.
Right. And I don't know what the tiebreaker situation is between Vancouver and Calgary. They both have 40 regulation and overtime wins. I'm not sure what the head-to-head series was like, so it's possible that
If Calgary were to catch them, they'd have one more win.
I'm saying if Calgary and good point. They would have one more win.
They
would get two wins. Yes, you're correct there. I apologize. Let's head to break. When we come back, Drew Spivak from ESPNDenver.com is going to join us. We'll talk about the Avalanche ahead of the Jets game in Denver tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Six:30 Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290, NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek from ESPNDenver.com, Drew Spivak. Drew, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me back on with you again.
Our pleasure, Drew. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and the Avalanche tomorrow evening in Denver. A huge game for the Winnipeg Jets. Win, and they're into the playoffs, as everybody in Winnipeg well knows. You know, from the Avalanche perspective, they had the nice victory last night against the Nashville Predators. Are they, you know, sort of champing at the bit to play spoiler, or are you get the feeling that they're ready to get the golf clubs out and hit the links?
You know what? It's so hard to tell with this team because they've been kind of so up and down the last, you know, couple weeks or whatnot, since we've pretty much known that they've been assuredly out of the playoffs. I mean, I know they were just officially eliminated the last weekend, but they go out last Saturday night in L.A. and only produced 10 shots on goal, and you're kind of thinking, well, maybe they mailed it in for the season this year, ready to get the golf clubs out and start hitting the links out here with the beautiful weather we've got. But, you know, then they come out last night against a Nashville team that's got a lot to play for, obviously, in the Central Division, and they get out to a slow start, which they, you know, typically do this year, and then they fight back. They get that 9-second route there where they get a couple of goals to tie the game up or take the lead or whatnot, and then they end up getting a big goal from Joey Hischin in the third to come back. So I think, you know, overall, I think they keep saying the right things, like they want to keep fighting, they just want to keep winning and doing all the right things. But at the end of the day, it's kind of hard to tell fully with this team where their mindset's at right now.
Drew, the biggest criticism, and I imagine that you've heard this before, the criticism of this team has always been that on defense they've got a lack of foot speed and really they've got a lack of talent, and they could really use especially at least one puck-rushing defenseman. Do you think that's the major issue that Joe Sakic is going to have to address with this team?
Looks like we lost Drew there for a second.
Hold on, Drew. You can act as Drew.
Okay, yeah, yes, Ezra. That's a good question. Next question, please, Richard.
So just, as a quick aside, because we're in the middle of talking about the Avalanche, so I love how the Toronto Maple Leafs are once again on TV. I mean...
I know.
This is something that needs to be corrected.
Yeah. Oh,
nobody wants to see that. Nobody. Okay?
So, yeah. I would agree with you there wholeheartedly.
You talk about Colorado and you read about it, and Drew was speaking about it there. You know, you read that they're still considering these games to be important, and they're trying to, they're making sure they have something to play for, it's pride and all that, but that only goes so far.
We got Drew on the line, Reem?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry about that, guys.
No, no worries. I guess, Drew, the question was so good that it left you speechless.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, no, Drew, I was just asking about, you know, the back end for the Colorado Avalanche and the lack of foot speed. And, you know, with the exception of Tyson Barrie, you know, they really lack offensive creativity from the back end. Do you think maybe that's the issue that Joe Sakic's going to have to address in the offseason?
You know, I think everybody here hopes so. And we've all seen the results. You know, we saw last year with how bad this team was defensively, and I think you could safely say that they probably got worse this year. I think the Brad Stewart trade and the extension that they signed him to has pretty much been a disaster. He doesn't have it anymore. I think you could question whether or not he even had it to begin with before they even made the move to bring in Brad Stewart. But yeah, I mean, other than Tyson Barrie, the defense, of course, has been a real disappointment. I mean, Zach Redmond got off to a nice start when he finally was able to get into the lineup and play consistently. But, you know, at the end of the day, Zach Redmond's probably, you know, your number five or six defenseman on this team, on a good team. He's probably not even in the lineup. And, you know, guys like Nate Ginnon, who can't really skate, and Nick Holden, who has trouble in his zone. And it's been a challenge. And so, you know, this team, if you look at kind of where they at, John Hayda, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Ryan Wilson, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. I'm pretty sure that Ryan Wilson's going to be gone for sure. Jan Hayda, he could be back next year, depending on, you know, what the Avalanche are able to do within free agency. I know there's not a ton of great defensemen out there, but there are some options that it would be better for this team than bringing back Jan Hayda. But he's a guy you could bring back if you put him in the right position, maybe as that sixth defenseman or fifth defenseman or whatnot. Jan Hayda could be pretty successful. But I think all in all, the back end is something the Avalanche absolutely have to address, no question about it, this offseason.
Yeah, definitely a priority, Drew, as you mentioned there. You look at their forwards, though, and there's been some injuries, sure, but the depth on the third and fourth lines also is probably something that needs to be addressed, is it not?
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you look at the numbers with this team, and they're the only team in the NHL that has six guys with 50 or more points. But then after that, the drop-off is so steep. I mean, you look at, you know, Nathan MacKinnon with 38 points, John Mitchell with 26 points, couple defensemen in there, and you got Max Talbot. I mean, the drop-off has been so steep for this team. And, you know, you mentioned the injuries. I think that's where a lot of the injuries occurred this year. It wasn't like a lot of the top guys in that top six got injured. I mean, yeah, you lost Nathan MacKinnon, but he didn't go down until early March. But, you know, you had Jamie McGinn, who was lost for the year, who was always kind of a go-to guy for this team that can produce a little bit of offense to be kind of a grinder. And, you know, we never saw Jesse Winchester, a guy that we thought could have made a nice little impact on the fourth line for the Avalanche. Danny Briere was pretty much non-existent for the entire season. So, yeah, they've got to go out and they've got to get more scoring depth. And, you know, because there is a lot of pieces on this team to build for. And you got a nice little core with Landeskog, MacKinnon, Duchesne, and O'Reilly, at least for now. We think O'Reilly. But you got a nice core to build from, and you could be really deep down the middle, but you're going to have to improve, especially on the wings on the third and fourth line.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned they have six guys on the roster who have 50 points or more, and of course you mentioned the next guy on the list was Nathan MacKinnon. And if you had said before the season he'd be one of the guys not on that list, people would have been caught quite off guard. In my watching that team play, and specifically MacKinnon this year, he seemed to be playing almost by himself a little bit too much, not utilizing his teammates, trying to do too much, and obviously you've seen him play a lot more than I have. What do you think are the reasons for his struggles this year before the injury?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with that assessment. It kind of seemed like he was trying to do too many things on his own, and, you know, it was weird because last year he had the benefit of playing with Paul Stastny, and, you know, Stastny did such a good job taking a lot of the burden, to, at least defensively, for MacKinnon, to kind of allow him to just come in there and just be a goal scorer. Do what you do, use your feet, skate it, like you can, and be that goal scorer this year. And then not having Paul Stastny with him this year was kind of a detriment to MacKinnon, and he kind of looked and tried to do too many things on his own. He kind of reminds me of one of those guys that's a little bit hard to play with at times because he's so kind of all over the place. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of structure to his game at this point, and he's still trying to get used to playing, you know, the NHL level and trying to adjust his, you know, as far as whether he's going to be a center in this league or he's going to be a winger in this league. I think it's still kind of hard to tell from that. But, yeah, it was definitely a disappointment to watch him play this year. And, you know, there was times where you thought, well, maybe he's going to break out of this little slump and get it going. I think he had the hat trick, and then he came back the next night and had another goal. It was like a four-goal streak there. And then it just kind of went down from there, and he ended up getting benched one night in Dallas and ended up getting demoted to the fourth line. So definitely a frustrating season. You hope with him it's just a sophomore slump. I mean, he's 19 years old. He's still got a lot to learn in this league, but the talent is definitely there for this kid to be one of the elite players in the NHL.
You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Our guest is Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com. And Drew, you look at the Avalanche, and obviously a bit of a disappointing year, and one of the areas they must be disappointed with is the success rate on the power play. 29th in the league, 14.3% success rate. Is improving the power play going to be an off-season priority for the Colorado Avalanche and their management?
Yeah, I think it has to be. I mean, you look at some of the guys that, you know, their power play numbers, I mean, they're leaders. I mean, Gabriel Landeskog had 8 power play goals. Jerome McGinley had 6. But then you only got 2 goals from O'Reilly, 2 goals from Tanque, 2 goals from Deschene. I mean, Tyson Barrie was one of your better guys on the power play this year. And that can't be the case if your defenseman is one of your leaders on the power play this year. You've got to be better on the power play. And this team's got so much talent. That's what I think is the weird thing, is they got so much firepower up front. They should be better on the power play, and it's complete opposite of what you would think on the penalty kill, because penalty kill wise, they're really good, and you know you would kind of think, well, they're not a very good defensive team. How are they so good on the penalty kill? So it's kind of been a weird kind of cross type thing. But you know, I think getting Eric Johnson back and having him the whole year next year will definitely help. And we've seen that Tyson Barrie was able to step up and be a key guy on this power play. You know, and Joey Hischen, a guy that's kind of stepped in and played that role, shown some signs of life. But overall, the power play has been a real disappointment for this team, and especially the lack of goals from guys like Matt Duchene.
You mentioned the power play there, and Drew, in your earlier answer, you talked about MacKinnon and him not having Paul Stastny playing shotgun. How much of a loss is Stastny on the power play? Because if you think about the players they have on that power play, you know, Landeskog and again, that are kind of shooters, and guys like MacKinnon and Duchene succeed so well in transition with their speed, but a power play is a little bit different in terms of how stagnant you are. Has Stastny's loss been a huge factor there?
Yeah, I think it has. I think just having his kind of presence on there, his ability to move the puck, you know, he was a guy that could pretty much make plays from anywhere he was at on the ice. You know, if he was behind the goal, which he was a lot of times, I think last year, right around the front of the net, he was a key guy in that area. So yeah, I think not having him, you know, was definitely a detriment. And I think part of the thing with this team too is they don't really have a big net front presence. You think of some of the guys that could play that role. I mean, Jerome McGinley has, I think, a little bit been known to play that role in his career, but he didn't do that as much this year. Gabriel Landeskog, to me, seems like a prime guy to be that kind of power forward, net front presence type of guy, and he hasn't really stepped in that role. So I think that's one of the big keys for this team, and not having that net front presence, especially on that power play.
Drew, you mentioned Joey Hischen, and a lot of people might not know him. He's a 2010 first-round pick of the Colorado Avalanche. He scored last night his first NHL goal, but he's really overcame, especially a lot of injuries. Can you talk about really someone who maybe a lot of Winnipeg Jets fans wouldn't know about, but he's got an interesting story?
Yeah, it's such a great story with Joey Hischen. He was one of those kids that, you know, came up in Canada there, and he was such a special player as a youth, and then going up into juniors, he ended up playing for Owen Sound, and then I think it was 2011 when he suffered a devastating injury, Braden McNabb, with an open ice hit in the Memorial Cup tournament, basically ended up knocking Joey Hischen out for about 22 months with a severe concussion. You know, he had dealt with some injuries a little bit before that, but that was kind of the year that he finally started to really get it together, and then that concussion just really set him back big time, and he struggled with it a lot. He finally got his opportunity with the Avalanche last year in the playoffs. He got called up, played in a couple games in the Wild Series, wasn't able to collect a point, and then last night he comes through and gets his first opportunity to score a goal and get his first NHL point, and it was really cool to see kind of the celebration from him, and knowing how much it meant to him and knowing how much it meant to his teammates. You know, when he goes over and skates with his teammates to celebrate the goal on the bench, everybody just sprayed him with water. They took all the caps off the water. It was just a really cool celebration to see, and just kind of see how much he's worked and how far he's come, because the kid's a talented player. Unfortunately, he hasn't quite gotten the opportunity with the Avalanche. I think a lot of fans would like to see. He's kind of been stuck playing down on the fourth line with a lot less talented guys, but he's a talented player. I think if given the right opportunity, he'd be a good kid, but it's definitely a fun and kind of heartwarming story to see how far he's come and battling back from that nasty concussion a couple of years ago.
Final question for you, Drew, and obviously the Jets win tomorrow. They're in the playoffs, and is there anything that Jets fans should be watching about this Avalanche team that's maybe different than the last time these two teams met?
Yeah, I mean, I think the lack of depth, really. I mean, you look at the third and fourth lines for this Avalanche team right now, not very good, honestly. I mean, they haven't been really good throughout the year, but they've gotten a lot worse. I mean, you've got John Mitchell, who's normally a third or fourth line guy. He's out there playing on the second line now with Matt Duchene and Jerome McGinley. And the Avs fourth line right now is consisting of Jordan Caron, who they acquired from the Bruins at the trade deadline, Freddie Hamilton, predominant AHL guy they acquired from the Sharks at the deadline, and then Joey Hischen has been playing on that line as well. So not a very deep team at all, a team that, you know, perennially gets off to really slow starts. Semyon Varlamov, he's kept the team in games. He had another 40 saves last night, but it's pretty much been, honestly, the same Avalanche team that you guys have seen a couple times this year, and really the last couple of years you guys have played so well against. So it should be a good favor for you guys, and you guys should be at a good advantage in this one and a must-win game for the Jets.
Well, Jets fans will like to hear that, Drew. Drew Spivak covers the Colorado Avalanche for ESPNDenver.com. Drew, appreciate your time this evening. Enjoy the game tomorrow evening.
Hey, anytime, guys. Thanks for having me on, and we're pulling for you in the playoffs. I hear we're all kind of rooting and want to see the Jets in the postseason.
Well, Winnipeg fans appreciate that, Drew. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Drew.
Hey, you got it, guys. Talk to you later.
Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Drew Spivak, ESPNDenver.com, for joining us to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Avs game. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
I'll love you two times, Drew.
Thank you, Ezzy. I appreciate that. We all know the stakes for tomorrow night's Jets-Avalanche game. A Jets win means that they've clinched a playoff spot, and they can take their foot off the gas pedal entering into Saturday afternoon's season finale at MTS Center. Mm-hmm. They've done the heavy lifting, beating the Wild and the Blues in two straight games back-to-back. How much fear, how much concern do you have that they're primed for a letdown against a team that has nothing to play for tomorrow evening after doing the hard work?
I'm not too concerned about that, Drew. Colorado's that bad. You know, and Drew Spivak speaks about it. He covers the team on a daily basis. Their third and fourth lines are, most NHL fans wouldn't even know the names, and they would have perfect reason to not know the names because many of these guys are not regular National Hockey League players. Then you look at the defense, you might know some of the names, familiarity, like Zach Redmond or Brad Stewart over the years, Jan Heda, but Nate Ginnin, Nick Holden, I mean, you're talking about nowhere near top-pairing defensemen. So matchup problems, I mean, if you go into this game as Paul Maurice, you don't really care who Little or Scheifele play against. That's a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You're not going up against Pietrangelo and Bomeister and Suter and Brodin and all that stuff. You're going up against a bunch of guys who can't defend well enough on a nightly basis. Now, of course, anything can happen in one game. We know that. But there's too much at stake, and this team has nothing to play for in Colorado. So sometimes that can obviously work in your favor, like last night, Edmonton-LA. But I wouldn't be overly concerned. This team seems pretty focused right now, and the way that you spoke about in the first segment, both of you did, in terms of the way they're playing, kind of keeping things to the outside and playing defensively. When you're playing against a team that has nothing to play for, it's no fun playing a defensive 1-0 game. Let's be honest here.
Sure.
Especially with a team with speed and skill like they have top end.
Colorado, you're
saying. You want to have some fun. So long as they stay out of the box, I don't see them having no game's easy, but so long as the Jets stay out of the box, I don't see them having too much trouble with Colorado tomorrow.
Yeah, the Jets have already beat the Avalanche twice this year. One of those was at home, 6-2, back in December. They actually played them twice in December, and the Avalanche won one of them in Colorado.
Yeah, that was the shootout. The Jets, I believe, are 3-0-1 against the Avs this year so far, though the one loss being that shootout loss.
Right. Sorry, yeah, I missed a game there. So, I mean, the Jets have played the Avalanche well. And as Richie mentioned, though, there's not going to be an easy victory. The Jets know that. And what Colorado has going for them that should scare the Winnipeg Jets is they still have an abundance of skill in that top six.
Mm-hmm.
And Richie's right. You know, you take out Jamie McGinn. Dennis Everberg is a guy who was playing decently for them. He's out for the season. And you take out Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, there's some grit in there. And Joey Hischon, you know, he's a nice story for the Colorado Avalanche. But it's really those top two lines. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen time and time again, you know, the Minnesota Wild, they have a very good top six. Their top six is just as good as anybody's, really, you know, with the addition of Thomas Vanek. So, you know, the Jets, it'll most likely be a close game. Varlamov's, you know, look at Varlamov's numbers. It's not Varlamov's the problem this year. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche, you know, you talk about the LA Kings. The Colorado Avalanche, I mean, they had 116 points last year and won the Central Division. It seems like that was 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this is a very young team, and I know that there's issues here. To me, I think, you know, Gabriel Landeskog, not necessarily a guy you want to build your team around. You know, I think they made him the captain a little bit too early, and I question sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, his ability to lead, and if he's not the right guy. Not to say that he's not a skilled player, but he's really turned it on here in the last couple months, and he was really struggling earlier on in the season, Richie. But, you know, this team, they can score, and they can score in bunches, and we saw them beat the Nashville Predators last night. Jerome Iginla, you know, we didn't have a chance to ask Drew Spivak about it during the interview, but he might get 30 goals again for the 13th time in his career. He's at 27 right now. He scored again last night, and he's done his job. They signed him to a three-year deal. Jerome Iginla has been excellent. So really, I mean, it comes back to this defense. It's one of the weaker groups of defensemen in the league. It really is. And we see nowadays in the NHL, you can't have kind of slower, kind of defensemen that really can't move the puck, and it hems you in your own zone. It affects possession and all of that, and that's really been their Achilles heel. I remember talking to Mike Chambers of the Denver Post about it mm-hmm. when they were in town, and he said that's the problem with this team. And you know, Richie asked Drew Spivak about Nathan MacKinnon. You've kind of got the issue that Edmonton's dealt with the last really 3 or 4 years, in that you've got a lot of skilled forwards, but you know, do they play necessarily well together? And at times they do, at times they don't. Colorado got off to that hot start last year, and they really rode that wave. This year, they didn't get off to a good start, so it's not going to be an easy game. And I think the Jets will win, because I think the way the Jets are playing right now, you know, they at the beginning of this season, you know, I thought it would be really tough for the Jets to make it right now. But the way they've played, coming out of that losing streak and the last two games here, I think that they want to make sure that they don't need to win that last game against Calgary. I really believe that with these two wins under their belt on the road, they want to finish the road trip undefeated, come back, know that last game, okay, it's a game, but we don't need it. We're already in, because mm-hmm. It puts added pressure on. So I think, you know, as Richie mentioned, stay out of the penalty box, play the way you've been playing, and, you know, you'll be all right.
Are you trying to avoid the Party-Harrison pairing going up against any of the top six of the Avalanche as much as you can?
Well, ideally, Drew, you don't have last change, so that's going to be an issue, and they can get that matchup out there when they really want. But ideally, you want to keep those top players away from... Party, because a lot of those guys really create off speed, off the rush.
Mm-hmm.
Not again, Landeskog as much as Deshane, well, for sure. So maybe more Deshane, because MacKinnon's not playing. So that's what you want to avoid. But the Jets are playing some good team defense right now, and they should be able to match up forward lines to pretty responsible defensively. So that would be a focus. The coach's job is to do that and make sure that happens.
Well,
but I wouldn't be so concerned about it. I mean, again, Drew Spivak mentioned John Mitchell. John Mitchell's a fast player. He's a nice player. He's not a top six guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're relying on guys who are not fit for the roles.
Let me ask you, it's game 81, obviously, for the Avalanche tomorrow night. You know, is Patrick Waugh that concerned about getting the right matchups, you know, for a game that where...
I think so, Drew. He's a pretty competitive guy. I mean, you coach to win. When you're in the game, you coach to win. I think I read the Jerome Iginla quote. This morning I read it in the Denver Post. You play to, like, once you get going, once the game starts, even though you're not in the playoffs, you play to win that particular game. And it's a classic case of, you know, players play to win no matter what. Organizations might intend to lose, like Arizona and Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
But the players are going to play. And there's a lot of guys, you know, with pride. You might even see Iginla drop the gloves tomorrow early. Sometimes he does that just to wake himself up and the team up.
And that's why we saw the Edmonton Oilers beat the LA Kings, Richie. They were really embarrassed. Jordan Eberle said mm-hmm. that exact, mm-hmm. Used that exact word, I should say. And that's why the Edmonton Oilers came out and they won. And they wanted to show that, you know, they aren't a junior team, and they can beat the defending Stanley Cup champions. Obviously, the LA Kings aren't happy about it, because now they're really in a tough spot. There's a good chance they don't make the playoffs because of that game. It's going to come down to that game. So, and it made the Winnipeg Jets pretty happy and made their chances of getting in easier. But no, I think, you know, we've talked about this for the last couple of weeks. These guys are competitive. All hockey players are competitive. It's in their nature. That's why they got to this level. And I think that they're going to come out there. And again, I think the Winnipeg Jets are a better team at this point in the season. But I definitely don't think the Winnipeg Jets are going to go in there and steamroll the Avalanche.
It'll be interesting. It'll happen tomorrow in Denver with Puck Drop here at 8 p.m. on TSN 1290 and on TSN 3 as well. You know, just want to make a mention the Jets' fourth line, the depth that they've been getting and the play they've been getting from the fourth line. Is that one of the most impressive things you've seen about the team recently is how is you know the contributions they're getting from all 12 forward groups?
Yeah, Chris Thorburn's had a pretty good year.
Four forward groups, 12 players, rather.
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw earlier in the season, guys, the third and fourth line struggled, and then you went out and you acquired Yuri Talusti and Lee Stempniak, and now you're seeing those two guys in the bottom six, and that's helped, and that's pushed Matt Halaschuk, Anthony Peluso, and then I guess Eric O'Dell, if you want to throw him in there. But, I mean, you guys know how much I love Chris Thorburn, and, you know, he's a guy that he, at times he's played third line left wing, and, I mean, it's obviously nice for, as Gary Lawless called him, the bearded grinder to get the winning goal there. But yeah, absolutely. Jim Slater's had a rough year offensively. He's really turned it on here in the last 3 weeks. So absolutely, it's been key for them to get contributions from the fourth line. And you see that every year, guys, in the playoffs. I mean, time and time again, you're going to see players step up who you least expect. But yeah, the fourth line has been better. And that's a result of partly as a result of some of the moves that Kevin Cheveldayoff made, but you know it's really going to come down to the top three lines when all is said and done as far as your primary source of offense. But yeah, it's absolutely nice to see some of the quote unquote grinders get goals.
It's also catch 22. Are they playing better because they're playing more? Or are they playing more because they're playing better?
I think it's that's true, and I think it's also a function of they certainly have more talent on their fourth line than they've had in any other.
They've played. I mean, it's only really Talusti there, Drew,
mm-hmm.
and who hasn't exactly. Now he's playing with not as talented players, but he hasn't exactly lit the world on fire. Those other guys have been playing real well.
Yeah.
So,
and I think too. I mean, you know, it's Jim Slater too. Again, he's only got I think it's 13 points on the season here. But Jim Slater is a top five faceoff guy. And I've always said that's going to be, you know, tough to ever replace. I mean, he is one of the best faceoff guys in the league, bar none. And he goes out there and he wins defensive zone faceoffs, and he's very good on the penalty kill. And now, you know, he's contributing offensively, so he's starting to get a little bit more attention. But I think, you know, he's had a pretty good year all around. Just the goals haven't been there.
Well, the Jets hope that Jets fans hope that the goals keep coming from the fourth line. We'll find out tomorrow, 8 o'clock puck drop in Denver. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Colligan is going to join us to talk about the struggles of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show. He is the Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for the hockeywriters.com, our good friend Mike Colligan. Mike, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me.
Mike, we're going to get to the fascinating three-part article you wrote about on the hockeywriters.com about the Pittsburgh Penguins and their immediate future if they continue to struggle and if they end up collapsing right out of the playoffs. But we'll start with that first. I mean, you look at the Penguins' numbers over the last month, the last 2 weeks, and they are one of the worst teams in the NHL. I think only Arizona has been worse than the Pittsburgh Penguins since March 14th. How do you explain the Penguins' struggles?
Yeah, really amazing when I started hearing some of those stats that were thrown out there, and I've heard even all the way back to December 22nd, I think they were the third worst team as far as record goes, or at least in the Eastern Conference. And it's just hard to believe with that much talent on the roster, a team that spends to the salary cap, and even this year with some of their injuries and that situation, they've spent over the salary cap. It's hard to believe that a team could be struggling that much, especially as we head into the playoffs. But I think it's really a domino effect. The first being that head coach Mike Johnston, a rookie head coach in the NHL, brought a new simplified system to the Penguins. He tried to really get the players back to basics, and that was a criticism under Dan Bylsma, was just too much complication, too many systems, too many details to pay attention to. And I think simple hockey is good, and that allowed the Penguins to get off to a fast start. But the problem is, as teams start to scout that, and as we get closer to playoff hockey, and now the cat's out of the bag, and if you're not adapting, if you're not reinventing yourself, that can get very tough as teams start to figure it out. So I think that was one factor. And then also the idea that they're playing a little bit more defensive this year, and they're focusing on team defense and really working from Marc-Andre Fleury and out. And so scoring is down with the team. I think they knew that would always be the case, but then they lost 3 out of 4 of their defensemen recently to injury, and I think that just crippled them, where they're not scoring goals, and now they're a defensively focused team that doesn't have 3 of their top 4 defensemen. I think that's just a formula for disaster, and that's what we've seen over the last few weeks and even months with this Penguins team.
Mike, a lot of the criticism of the Pittsburgh Penguins this year has really been directed at Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, which I find to be pretty ridiculous considering Sidney Crosby is tied for the league lead in points. Evgeny Malkin has been over a point a game. And to me, I kind of look at the secondary scoring, and I look at a guy like Chris Kunitz, and he's really had a tough year. What's been wrong with his play, in your opinion, this year?
Yeah, Chris Kunitz is a guy that I think has looked, I'll call it disengaged. And, I'm not in the locker room this season. I'm not talking to any of those players, so I couldn't really give you a reason why. But I think he's just a guy that doesn't look like himself. And I think you were kind of headed in the right direction there as far as really what the problems with this team has been, at least from that scoring perspective. Malkin and Crosby have been great. Crosby's had some ups and downs, and I think he had some injury problems through much of the year that have been limiting a bit, but he's been playing unbelievable hockey the last 6 weeks or so. Malkin, I think, is currently injured, but is putting an effort out there and at least doing everything he can. But when you start to look at then the secondary scoring, they don't have James Neal anymore. They don't have that guy that, when you shut down the two superstars, is going to step up with that key goal. They've got a lot of hard workers, Patrick Hornquist, Daniel Winnick, Steve Downey, Blake Como. None of those guys are really going to get you that clutch goal, and I think that's a problem as they head into the playoffs and they play some of these better and deeper teams. If those two superstars get shut down, I don't know that the Penguins have the secondary scoring to really step up.
And you pointed out, Mike, a lot of the weaknesses of the squad. Maybe at a macro level, what if you had to say, if somebody asked you, I'm going to ask you now, what is the identity of this team? If there's one or a couple of words you can use to describe this team, can you describe this? Does this team have an identity, or is it a kind of a mishmash of talent from two different regimes put together to try and win a cup?
Yeah, I would say the latter. I was on the show earlier today, and I ended up asking the host the same thing out loud, and I said, if you had to describe the Penguins in one phrase, what would it be? Because I couldn't think of anything. I don't know what I would describe them as, whereas I think early in the Ratio regime, and especially under Dan Bylsma, you knew what the Penguins were, good and bad. You knew they were going to play an up-tempo speed game. They were going to score a lot of goals and potentially give up a lot in the back end as well, but you really knew what that was. You knew the type of player that they were looking for, and again, there were positives and negatives to that, but I think you hit the nail on the head where this happens anytime you bring in a new regime, and when you look at the turnaround time that Jim Rutherford, the new general manager, had coming in after a second-round playoff exit where they clean house, bring in a new GM, a new head coach, and then less than a month later are at the NHL draft and eventually free agency a few days later, that's a quick turnaround. It's tough to have any plan and then execute on that plan in that amount of time, and I think we're seeing that play out where Rutherford made a number of trades throughout the year to get a type of guy that he wanted. But you still have the same core in place, and you still have a lot of the aspects of the Ray Shiro era, and I think that's exactly what you said.
You're listening to NHL Midweek. We are joined by Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He's written a fascinating piece titled Mario Lemieux, Ron Burkle, both of whom are the owners of the Penguins.
Great piece.
And the future of the Pittsburgh Penguins. We just tweeted it out from our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. Mike, I want to talk about the article now because it really gives a very good insight into the Penguins and the business dealings and the relationship between Lemieux and Burkle. Sort of on an overarching high level, what would you describe the thesis of the article as?
It's an interesting story, and I think we all know Mario Lemieux pretty well, and at least from his playing days, and he's kept a low profile since taking over ownership of the team back in 1999 when he converted the money that he was owed into an ownership stake and saved the team from bankruptcy and ultimately kept them in Pittsburgh with a new arena shortly thereafter. But Ron Burkle's a guy that I don't think a lot of people would know, at least hockey fans, and one of the richest billionaires in the world and keeps a very low profile himself. And He's a guy that put $20 million into that plan back in 1999. So over the last 16 years, these two guys have been linked as owner of the Penguins. And we know the story from 99 in bankruptcy to 2009, a Stanley Cup, to one of the best stories in hockey, at least in recent history. But now they're sitting in a situation where, as you look at Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin getting older, and we know that players don't continue to play at an elite level into their late 30s or even early 30s these days, you have to start to ask questions. And all of those concerns that we talked about in the first half of the segment, I think, start to come into play when you think, what's the long-term future of at least this era of the Pittsburgh Penguins? And as Mario Lemieux thinks about the next phase of his life, does he really covet the ownership of the spotlight that comes with that? Is Ron Burkle, as a businessman, really thinking about the long-term upside potential of this investment, one that he's done very well on since initially investing that $20 million? So looking at all of those aspects, and then ultimately, you know, wondering out loud whether this is a time where they would think about selling and perhaps bringing in a new group and perhaps a new vision along with that, while Malkin and Crosby are still at an age where you could considerably argue that they could win one or two more Stanley Cups.
Mike, you mentioned kind of the investment side of being an owner of the Pittsburgh Penguins and being an owner really of any professional sports team, but you broke up the article into three parts, and the second part was return on investment and kind of the difference in philosophy between Mario Lemieux, who's a very loyal person and wants to make sure that he takes care of friends or others that he's worked with in the NHL, but how much of that difference in philosophies has affected, I guess, the differences between Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle, how much is that affected the management of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Well, you know what? I would say it's been the best thing that could happen to them, and it could potentially be the worst thing that could happen to them. And when you have a pair that is so different in personalities and, like you said, so different in management style, that can sometimes be the best combination, is you've got guys that are bringing different perspectives, different skill sets. When they come together, they create this magical team and chemistry, much like we see on the ice in the sport of hockey. But when things go the other way, I think those can potentially lead to problems as well. And when people are under stress and you're facing off against a guy that you don't really see the same way, you know, not saying that rift exists, but I think that potentially can creep up and become a negative. And if that's the interesting thing, is when you have these ownership groups that mostly are in the background, we know from, you know, teams like Vancouver and teams in recent years that have had management start to creep into that picture as things start to slip and expectations are through the roof and the teams don't meet those expectations, it can get ugly pretty quick. And we'll see what happens with the Penguins over the next months and next few years here. But they're certainly in a tough spot where you don't have a real obvious solution in sight.
You know, Mike, and I don't know that this is not substantiated at all, it just comes to me thinking about all the if there is change again, and whether that change is coaching or management or both or ownership or all three of those things. And you know, it's very possibly if ownership were to change, then the people in charge could also change. Is there any possibility that Malkin or Crosby become a little bit unhappy with where things are going and maybe the lack of direction and would look to, and they're under contract, of course, but would look elsewhere to maybe ask out of town?
Well, when you think back on Malkin and Crosby, you know, they came out of those first contracts, second contracts, and then we're looking at, you know, what could they make on the open market? And I think you could argue at $8.7 million, Sidney Crosby is underpaid. And mm-hmm. even if you're comparing him to Taves and Kane last year and the deal that they got and what we'll probably see over the next few years, he took a discount, and I think that's tough to argue. So I think your point is exactly right, where those guys signed up for that. They said, hey, you know what? I'm going to take less. And I know that money's going to be well spent. It's going to be spent to build a strong team and give us strong Stanley Cup chances. And when that script flips, and now, you know, if there is doubt there, or the guys that made those promises initially are no longer in the equation, whether that's a coach or a general manager or even an owner, I think you can start to have second guessing. And I don't know what either of those guys are thinking, but I think it's certainly a possibility as you look at, you know, hey, I signed up for this. I took less than I could make, but I was assuming there was an implicit promise there that things would turn out a little bit differently. And so I think as these guys are still in their primes and they know there's an opportunity to win Stanley Cups, they might start to ask themselves, you know, is my best opportunity in Pittsburgh? Or if things do go south and get worse, they might think elsewhere as well. But both have no trade clauses and therefore are holding the steering wheel as far as that's concerned.
Mike, it's a fascinating article. Job well done in writing it. The Penguins are going to be one of the most interesting teams to watch over the next couple of games to see if they can reverse this slide and end up in a playoff spot, or if it's going to be a summer of upheaval in Pittsburgh. Appreciate your time as always, Mike.
Sure thing, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thanks to Mike Colligan for joining us to talk about the struggling Pittsburgh Penguins. We'll continue on with the same theme this segment, but it's first brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, the Pittsburgh Penguins, as we talked about with Mike Colligan in the segment earlier, just an absolute mess, really. I mean, you don't want to press the panic button, but...
Well, you have to.
You have to at this point. I mean, you know, for the last number of weeks, I've sort of looked at the Penguins and said, yeah, but they're clearly in the playoffs, so when it matters, they'll pick it up. I mean, that's the time for them to pick it up is almost gone at this point.
I mean, it's going to come down to their last two games. They're not out of the playoffs.
They're the 29th team in the NHL since the middle of March.
No, but I'm just saying, I mean, they can still get in.
I know so, they can still
and
get
if
in.
You get in and you get, who knows? I mean, you get out of the first round, which we know is the hardest round to get out of. Look, Drew, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think, with the way they've played as of late, I think have really... almost shown what we've been talking about more so by with this losing streak, Rich. And what I mean by that is the Pittsburgh Penguins haven't been an elite team for a while now. I think we'd all agree with that. The Pittsburgh Penguins last year, I thought at times, really outplayed the New York Rangers. I mean, if you watch those games, they were outshooting them and mm-hmm. outchancing them. Mm-hmm. And Henrik Lundqvist is one of the best goalies in the league.
They're up 3-1 last year, weren't they?
They were.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, but we're talking, going back, Drew, to 2008 and 2009, when Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin were both in their early 20s and Jordan Staal was there, and we remember those teams, Max Talbot getting the winning goal in the Stanley Cup Finals. Mm-hmm. That was an elite team. And during those years, you thought, okay, the Pittsburgh Penguins, like, this is going to be a powerhouse for the next 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely.
And now the Pittsburgh Penguins, sure, they might miss the playoffs, but whether they get into the playoffs or not, I think... what has been exposed here, you know, Richie asked Mike Colligan about this. I mean, it's kind of a mishmash. How have they built their team here? You know, they brought in David Perron. They gave up the first rounder. Mm-hmm. David Perron was pretty good when he first came over there in January, but he struggled as of late. You know, Chris Kunitz is getting a little bit older, and, you know, last year he had an amazing season and obviously made the Olympics alongside his line mate with Sidney Crosby. But, you know, we're starting to see some of these warts exposed. Like, losing Matt Niskanen mm-hmm. and Brooks Orpik, I mean, was super detrimental to this team. And Olli Maatta, I mean, if a 19-year-old goes out and that's really going to, you know, be a huge impact on your defense, that means that you really haven't built your defense. Because Olli Maatta is only his second year in the NHL. And I realize he's been a big surprise, but he wasn't supposed to make the NHL at 18 years old. I mean, that was a surprise. He played his way onto the team.
For
but
sure.
If you look at over the years, Rich, you know, Chris Letang, I mean, he's an amazing defenseman. He's one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. He gets injured time and time again. Paul Martin, I mean, he's at best probably on a good mm-hmm. team, a third-pairing defenseman. So, I mean, you've seen the way this team has been built. They haven't drafted. I mean, a guy like Bo Bennett, they've given him opportunity after opportunity. He's still young at 23 years old.
First goal in 30 games
last night. But he's struggled. Mm-hmm, yeah. I mean, they haven't drafted as well as other teams.
Well, they haven't. I mean,
they haven't developed as well as other teams. And you're starting to see, you know, it fall apart a little bit. And again, I asked the question to Mike Colligan. I mean, to me, Crosby and Malkin are still two of the best players in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, Crosby's not going to get 104 points this year like he did last year. He's still an 85-point guy. I mean, he's still an amazing player. Crosby can't do it all. He's 28 years old now. I mean, and we saw that, you know, Gretzky was always insulated with other players. And I mean, obviously Crosby, you know, you'd like to see him producing more. But, you know, time after time, Rich, it's like they depend on the same thing. Crosby and Malkin have got to score. And they seem to always need, you know, more. And they don't get it. And I just think mm-hmm. that, you know, the way this team has been constructed and the way they've added players. And, you know, they gave up a first-round pick to get David Perron. And they might miss the playoffs.
Well, that's what can't happen, right? When you give up that first round pick, you can make the you can trade the first round pick in a deep draft. I believe it was this year's pick.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Perron adds skill to your top six.
Yep.
You needed the depth on the wings, and there is a window there of Crosby and Malkin in their mid to late primes. So I don't have a huge issue with that move. Obviously, you want to retain the picks when you can, but there also is that window. The problem is on the back end, where they're playing some five defensemen here for a while, and they're not very good. I mean, they're all right. They're not great, though. It's tough to win this league when you don't have some big guys on the back end. I mean, that's, to me, has always been their biggest problem. If you go back to all of our shows and previews the past few years, I've always hammered home that their defense isn't good enough, and I feel the same way now.
What I find amazing when you look at the Penguins, I mean, you look at their 20 men, their regular 20-man roster, not including all the guys who are on IR right now, but the 20 guys who played for them last night. Of those 20 guys, they only drafted five of them. I mean, that just speaks to how poor their drafting has been. You know, they've been trading a lot of their first-round picks, which is fine, because they envisioned themselves as a cup contender, and you're often going to trade those late first-round picks for, you know, assets. But they haven't drafted anything at all in the second and the third and the fourth rounds to, you know, to fill in and to, you know, find somebody who's a diamond in the rough and to improve on that point. It's amazing. I mean, can you think of another team that only has five players on their 20-man roster as their own draft picks?
I think the Jets only have five, Drew.
No.
Six. Trouba's one, Sherratt's two, Lowry's three from last night. Slater's four. Little's five and Shifley's six. So, I mean, it depends what the moves you make, too. That's my point there. I understand your point, Drew, because you have to draft. You didn't draft. But you're absolutely right. But it's also the moves you make. If you trade those draft picks and you turn them into assets and you turn those into assets, you're okay. They haven't done that.
Yeah.
Pavlik would be seven, but
I think that when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, too, and I still think it's a very good team. And then you start to wonder, okay, well, what's happening? Is there other things happening with this team? And we've known for quite a while now. See, the Pittsburgh Penguins went out and they made some moves to make themselves a little bit tougher. And David Perron included. David Perron is a tough player to play against. But you're talking about Steve Downey. You're talking about Max LaPierre. Nick Spaulding was included in the trade for James Neal. They insisted to get Nick Spaulding, a guy to play against. But the thing is,
I think it's
coaching. They're not as elite. They're not elite enough at this point for that really to be kind of the difference in the way they play. Pittsburgh Penguins are still not a very hard team to play against. Mm-hmm. They don't have a number one shutdown defenseman. They're not very scary on the back end. Rob Scuderi was really instrumental back when they won the Cup, but he's slower now. Mm-hmm. And you
wasn't
know
that
you could really
begin with either.
And, right, and you can say that about a lot of their defensemen. And really, this team, you know, it's there's a certain element of this team. You know that you kind of wonder, you know, whether it's identity, whether it's the way they play. I mean, Mike Colligan mentioned last segment that they've tried to play a little bit more defensively. Do they have the type of team to play like that, though?
You know, but you look at it as you look at like what Winnipeg's doing, like kind of bigger teams. I understand they're more physical, but to me, it's a coaching thing when it comes down to that.
You got a rookie coach, Richie.
It's identity, right? He wasn't their first choice. We know that. Jim Rutherford wasn't their first choice. Can I have a patchwork group here? Yeah, I still think the players on paper, if they're all healthy, are pretty good. I mean, they still scare me in a playoff series. They still scare me. I don't want to play against those guys in a playoff series because, yeah, there are ways you can beat them, and I don't love their D, and I don't love
certain
things.
Especially if you get Letang back, you get some other players.
Yeah, and Letang's had a good year. So, I mean, you know, if Fleury has played really well before, but what's their identity? I get back, because I asked Mike that, and I don't know the answer. I don't think Mike knows the team a hell of a lot better than I do, and he didn't know the answer. You know, are they a speed team, quickness? Okay, well, is their defense good enough to play that? Or do they have this, you know, the horses to do that? In some ways, they do. Is it toughness? Not really. What is Jim Rutherford trying to do? How long is he there for? Is it a two-year term he's there for? If that's the case, and what's his goal? Is his goal not the big picture? If it is a short term, do they have the pieces? I mean, you look at what Paul Maurice, we talked about it earlier in the show, Paul Maurice and Bob Harley have instilled a certain work ethic in the game. You talk all you want about this and that. The Jets and Flames are where they are, in my opinion, because they work hard. And they work harder than a lot of teams.
And they know what's expected of them night in and night out.
And that's part and parcel with working hard.
Sure.
Identifying roles, playing that role, and all that stuff. And when you see a team like Pittsburgh, you wonder all the time. I'm not saying they're sitting there and they're the laziest team, but that lack of identity and the ability to have your players know to how to buy in and what they're buying into, I think, is more important, is what I'm trying to say. That seems to be lacking. Doesn't mean you can't get it, but it's a heck of a lot harder to get it in the end of the season than it is in training camp.
And again, we don't want to say that Mike Johnston isn't a good coach, but he comes from the WHL.
We don't know if he's a good coach, is he?
No, but I'm just saying.
He's never been a head coach in the National Hockey League.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying he's a bad coach, but you watch, you know, the way they've played this year and how they've struggled. And, Drew, you can't forget, this team was in first place in the East in December.
Yeah.
So it's not like the Penguins have been, you know, kind of a bad team mm-hmm. the whole year or a mediocre team. They were playing well, and then all of a sudden you have some adversity and you have a young team mm-hmm. and you have especially on defense, you've got some new guys in there, and you've got a guy like Derek Pouliot who's in his rookie year, essentially. He's played a little bit before this year, but and then you got a rookie coach, and you have success in the WHL with the Portland Winterhawks, but now, you know, this is a different ballgame. Now you're fighting for your playoff lives, and I wouldn't be surprised if Pittsburgh still gets in. They got the Islanders and Buffalo mm-hmm. coming up. Just saying, I mean, this is a different ball game.
Well, I mean, it raises the question, as you're absolutely right, they started off like a house on fire, but it raises the question of to which Penguins team is the real team. The one that started, you know, terrific and was one of the top teams in the East up until, you know, or the team that's gone 20-21-6 in their last 47 games. I mean, you know, you can talk about, you know, so small sample sizes. Well, that's not a small sample size. It's more than half the year, and there's 7 games below 500.
No, it's not a small sample size. They've been bad the second half of the season.
The last 50 games they've been bad.
Second half of the season, or last 60%, whatever you want to call it.
I mean,
they haven't been good, and you know, obviously hoping that they can get in, you know, at the expense of probably the Ottawa Senators or maybe the Boston Bruins. But I think this shows you that, you know, again, who knows? Maybe they get in and they can upset someone in the first round. I would be surprised the way they're playing, but I think this has exposed some things long term. The way this team is constructed, long term, you have to address some things, whether that's at the management level or that's through drafting and really the lack of draft picks in your lineup right now.
If they play Montreal, are you that convinced that they're a complete underdog?
No, because you have Crosby and Malkin. I'm not that convinced. I'm not sure they're getting into the playoffs, though, to begin with.
Even in general, if they play Montreal, is Montreal that good? Well, Carey Price has two bad games.
Yeah, no, your point is well taken.
No teams are, I mean, again, you have some, like, two or three, four teams, maybe five, six. I think it's shrunk over the course of the year.
It's all about matchups, Richie.
It's all about matchups. That's exactly
what happens in a series, because each series takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, look, if they make it, can they upset anybody? Absolutely they can, because they have Crosby and they have Malkin, and Fleury's been very good in the regular season.
And the new format does not require you to beat... If you're a bottom team, it does not require you to beat the three best teams to get to the cup, right, like it used to. You can, and so, for example, if they are to draw into the Atlantic and play Montreal, I could see them beating Montreal. I'm not saying I'd pick them, but I could see them beating Montreal. And if Detroit were to beat Tampa, because I don't think they'd beat Tampa, they could beat Detroit. You know, like, you look at this league, and it's such parity. I mean, it's such a watered-down product right now.
Yeah.
And so that gives any team a chance.
You're absolutely right. The fact that we're even, I mean, what I'm most amazed about is the fact that we're even talking about, are the Penguins a playoff team with two games to go in the regular season? Because they've been that bad for that long that this is now a real subject matter.
But it's how you get to it too, right? The Penguins have come down. The Bruins have kind of turned it on now. Your impression of the Bruins right now is pretty good. You wouldn't want to play them. And I'm sure that's the way that they're playing right now, right? And they've been on a roll here.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at their past, well, yeah, a role more than they were before, put it that way.
Well,
but look at it this way, okay? The Penguins playing poorly recently, but they come to the same result at the end of the day. They're 1 point apart.
Yeah, you're right. It's all about,
Perspective.
Absolutely, it's all about perspective. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Eastern Conference playoff race. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Seven 7:30 in the evening, and you're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Going to spend the next 10 or so minutes talking about the Eastern Conference playoff race, and it's amazing how quickly things change. Because about a month ago, we sort of figured that pretty much the Eastern Conference playoffs were almost home and cooled. Everybody figured that, okay, it's going to be these eight teams, and they're going to figure out the position that they're all going to be in, but that's pretty much going to be it. you know, a couple of struggles later and a couple of hot streaks the hot streak from the Ottawa Senators, and there's a lot that is still up in the air when it comes to the Eastern Conference playoff race, entering into the last two games for most of these teams. Boston has three games left. They're playing tonight against the Washington Capitals, and I should update the score there. At the 10-minute mark of the first period, the Washington Capitals lead Boston 2-0. So that's a good outcome so far for the Capitals, as the Bruins really do need that victory. If they lose that game, then all of a sudden they're tied with Ottawa, and there goes their game in hand. And it's sort of arguable which team has the harder schedule, given that the Rangers have nothing to play for. Ottawa has the Rangers tomorrow night and then Philadelphia on Saturday, whereas the Bruins have Florida tomorrow night and then Tampa on Saturday.
Yeah, and yeah, you're right. The Rangers have clinched the President's Trophy. To me, I mean, we haven't talked about the Ottawa Senators yet really tonight, but to me, it's just a great story. Whether they get in or not, it's a great story. And where do you begin with the Hamburglar or going to former Brandon Wheat King Mark Stone? It's just been incredible that when Paul McLean was fired by the Ottawa Senators earlier this season, really.
That was this season? I forgot. Seriously.
Yeah, everyone just kind of expected, Richie, the Ottawa Senators to kind of fade out and be kind of one of the bottom teams. Maybe even at one point people were talking about them being in the Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel sweepstakes.
Well, should they trade Bobby Ryan?
Exactly.
You know, do they need to bottom out and tank and do a complete rebuild?
They turned the season around, and you got to give some credit to Dave Cameron. You got to give credit to the players. You know, what about Dave Cameron possibly if they get in? Does he get a Jack Adams, nomination? I don't think it's that ridiculous to say that.
You get some votes, I bet.
You get some votes. And, you know, this team is, it's a skilled team. And I think, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit on this show, whether it was with Dean Brown or James Gordon of the Ottawa Citizen. I mean, Alfredson leaves and then Jason Spezza leaves and they're kind of filling that leadership role. It was kind of changing of the guard. And, you know, Kyle Turris really has to take over that number one center role. And Bobby Ryan, is he really ready to reestablish himself? And we saw rookies struggle last year and there was more problems this year. And now Dave Cameron comes in and he gives Mika Zibanejad more time. He gives Mark Stone more playing time. And these guys Mark Stone, I think, what is he at, 60 points now? I mean, it's really incredible. He got the overtime winner last night. But, you know, it's really, I mean, you could flip a coin right now. Drew, you know, you mentioned Boston has the game in hand, but they're losing right now. But really, the way it's going right now, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, you got the Islanders right now who can still, move up.
Or fall off.
They can fall off. So they're still playing for something, only one point behind Washington in the Metropolitan Division. Obviously, that would change if Washington wins tonight. But, you know, it's fascinating because we really thought, you know, even, 6 weeks ago, that it was really maybe between Florida and Boston, and then Pittsburgh slipped down, and Ottawa, it really hasn't cooled off. So it's incredible. I think there's so many good stories coming out there. You know, with the unfortunate news with Brian Murray's health, I think it would be really just add that extra bonus if they could get in, for him and the city, because, they've really struggled, Ottawa, to reestablish themselves as a playoff team and since Paul McLean won head coach. It would be really incredible. It's going to be such a good race, and it's great to see here with, 3 days left in the season, there's so many games that are going to matter, because what we've seen time and time again is the playoff races have kind of been, over with a week and week and a half to go. So it's incredible. I hope that Ottawa gets in for the sake of, the city of Ottawa and Canadian team, but, it's not going to be easy for them.
Crazy how young they are.
Yeah, they are. I believe they're the youngest team in the NHL, and do they have the lowest payroll in the league as well?
According to you, Drew, Eugene Melnyk has money problems.
Well, he does have money problems. It's not occurring to me. It's going to a lot of other
people
as well.
If they don't have the lowest payroll, Drew,
right,
they're probably bottom five, but bottom three.
Yeah, Mark Stone, I mean, he's up to 61 points on the year. Mike Hoffman's been incredible. He's got 27 goals for the Senators. So, I mean, they're a great story.
But that's the inspiring part, because if you're a Senators fan, you're thinking, this is a great story. Not only because they've just made this run that's been very unforeseen, it's because young guys are taking them on the run, which means like it bodes well for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and then you add in, as you were saying, then Brian Murray and his battle with cancer and everything else. And you look at that East. I mean, the New York Islanders, I assume you guys saw the goal that Yaroslav Halak gave up yesterday. And that's, I got to say, number one cause for concern about the New York Islanders was probably going to be their goaltending, because we've seen Yaroslav Halak struggle.
They're like the Flyers, kind of. Like, they decide they're just going to copy the Flyers and make sure that every year goaltending is a problem.
Except that the signs
better than
for a four-year contract.
Yeah, he's better than they had before, but
Yeah, but I mean
that's what makes the next few games so fascinating, because the Islanders have been struggling. The Islanders have only won 3 of their last 10 games, mm-hmm. so they want to get back on the winning track. They want to beat Pittsburgh, who knocked them out of the playoffs in the first round 2 years ago. And then you've got the Ottawa Senators, who are playing a Rangers team, as we just mentioned, who's really has nothing to play for, because they're probably going to arrest some guys, actually, because they've already won the President's Trophy.
You're going to arrest guys?
Yes. So I mean,
the cops are showing up.
It's really going to be. It's going to come down to the wire in both conferences.
You look at the Senators and the Bruins, and they can both get to 99 points. And if, you know, the Penguins and the Islanders, if the Penguins beat New York on Friday night, both those teams could end up at 98 points if they were to lose their final games. Now, they're, you know, the Penguins would have to lose to Buffalo on the last game of the regular season, but wouldn't that be ironic? And the Detroit Red Wings, they're not home and cooled yet either at 97 points, but at least they got a victory when they needed it against against Carolina.
Big goals at the end of the game yesterday. Nyquist obviously tying it up there was huge, and against a Carolina team that you have to take advantage of.
No, absolutely, and they still play Carolina again on the last game of the season. So the East, as I was saying, you know, complete upheaval there, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it boils down over the last two games of the regular season. The thing that's going against Ottawa, of course, is that they do not hold any of the tiebreakers for regulation or overtime victories.
So we talk about what's the magic number in the West. And it's probably 98, right? So if the Jets get to 98 points, they'll most likely get in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the West, in the East, it's 100. And who would have thought in the East, 100 points would be required? And it's really because of how bad it is at the bottom. That's really what's happened. I mean,
oh, it's terrible. You watch some of these teams. You could go in for free and want your money back.
Yeah, you're saying because they just keep beating, they just keep defeating these bottom dwelling teams. That's what would make it so ironic if the Penguins had to beat Buffalo on the last game of the season. They somehow couldn't do that. Right. I mean, wouldn't that just be their season in a nutshell? Of course, you look at it. I mean, that's the East is just an absolute. Fascinating final two games there. The Senators, like I said, they're going into New York to play the Rangers tomorrow night. The Bruins back-to-back, they're in Florida tomorrow night. The Islanders have Pittsburgh on Friday night, and then Columbus, and the Detroit Red Wings, they have Montreal tomorrow night, and then at Carolina on Saturday. It's a tremendous race in the Eastern Conference, and I'm sure you're looking back and, you know,
Sorry to interrupt. I'm really hoping for good playoffs this year, you know, because
the regular season's been so lousy.
Well, the races are good, so I can't say it. I mean, my personal opinion is that, like I said it on the show many times, I think the quality is not great, but I hope the playoffs can really turn it up a notch here and see some of these good matchups.
Well, I mean, just, you know, watching the Jets and the Blues last night, and if those two teams, they could match up, you know, very easily in the first round. Depending on how the final, you know, the final couple games shake out and where the standings end up. A 7-game series between those two teams, I mean, there's already, you know, a pretty good hate on between both those teams given the number of times they've played in the last month of the season. Add in 7 more games or a minimum of 4 more games over a course of 8 or 9 nights, and you're going to have an absolute, I mean, you know, it's going to be a war on ice, to use the, you know, even though it's a bit of a cliche. Those are two teams that already don't like each other, and then you add in the stakes of a playoff series, it would just be incredible.
Yeah, and that game obviously had a playoff feel, and that was one of those games, those 1-0 games, that really was an excellent hockey game. And there obviously has been a lack of scoring in the NHL this year, whether you want to look at goals per game or just the individual scoring race that Crosby and Tavares are tied for right now. But that had lots of chances and good goaltending, and that's what you often see in the playoffs. And I think you're going to see that as we head into the playoffs. I don't think we ever see a bad first round. And this year, you're going to see some teams that you didn't expect to be there. And, you know, again, for me, it's my favorite time of the year, and especially with the Jets getting in this year for the first time since 96, I think it's going to be pretty special.
I think I agree with that. I'm looking forward to having, you know, non-Arizona, Toronto, Buffalo games on the slate, and these teams are so similar. I mean, you could match up basically every team against every team, and you could say it could be a 7-game series, and you wouldn't be considered crazy.
But and you get the dregs of the league that have been stinking it up all season. You finally get them away from your eyesight, and you can say, "Go away! You've tortured us for the last number of months with how terrible you've been."
McDavid has made incentivize failing, which it has. Let's be honest; it's never been this bad. And the playoffs, there's still those teams that obviously at the top are going to be those teams at the top. Are very similar, in my opinion, this year. So it's a free-for-all. Some people, I prefer it with kind of the big dog, But I do, this still is, it makes for some fascinating television, and radio, of course, is the fact that anybody can beat anybody. So there's going to be 16 cities that come into this tournament thinking that they can win. And like, we, you know, we've discounted a little bit of Calgary, Vancouver in terms of a long-term run, and I would stick by that. But you could probably, I assure that people in that city wouldn't agree with that. So I legitimately think 16 cities in this league think that they can go all the way to the cup.
Oh, one of Calgary and Vancouver is probably going to make it to the second round. So once you make it past the first round, you say, well,
that's right,
might as well keep going. I mean, you know, talk about teams horrifying. I mean, the Leafs are down 4-0 to the Blue Jackets.
It's an embarrassment to the game. And you just hope they don't get Connor McDavid, because you can't watch him any more than you already do.
The Blue Jackets are a team that deserved to get Connor McDavid. I mean, prior to losing to the Rangers, what was that, Monday night they lost to the Rangers? Mm-hmm. I think they'd won something like 9 in a row. So, you know, that's a team that's at least, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they're doing it with pride.
That's true.
And they're going to be, that's a team that's going to be back in the playoffs next year once they get, I mean, they've had a horrible season of injuries. I'd say the Blue Jackets are still a team with an upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. And they're doing their fans proud with their performance over the last, you know, 2 weeks to a month of the NHL season. It's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Wednesday evening. Programming note, next week, NHL Midweek is on Tuesday. It's a playoff preview spectacular where we will go through each and every of the NHL playoff series, break them down in detail like only we can. So again, Tuesday, 6 p.m. next week for NHL Midweek.
There's going to be 8 series to cover.
Yeah.
I figure it would be 3 hours.
Yeah, either 2 or 3 hours. We're not sure yet, but we're going to figure that out in the next couple days.
Well, if we go 3 hours, which would be nice. First hour, entire Jets preview.
Assuming the Jets make it, which if they don't at this point, it's going to be quite the collapse. We would spend the entire first hour doing the Jets, and then the
first
second
segment,
and third hour.
We're going to give you the tell. You're going to tell you right now. First segment would be 5-on-5. Second segment, some special teams. We'll do some coaching. I mean, we'll get into detail. I mean, that'll be fun. If it's say Jets and Anaheim, which I kind of think it's going to be, mm-hmm, that'll be great to break down.
Well, it'll be the first playoff series here until it's in Winnipeg since 1996. NHL playoff series, mind you, since 1996. And we will bring you complete coverage of that, of course, next Tuesday with a special edition of NHL Midweek. Now, I understand that there was a phone call on H&L last Thursday, and I didn't get a chance to hear this. Richie, you have heard this?
I did hear it live, yeah.
Okay, so this is our boy Rowdy from the Dutch Jets fan from the Netherlands. He's called into our program a couple of times, of course, on the rare occasion that we do take calls. Here's Rowdy from last Thursday's H&L.
And by the way, about Tyler Myers, if you're still listening, of course, the Hustler and the Lawless sandwich is great, but you should try out the Illegal Curve.
Rowdy, that does not exist. It's like the McRib. They brought it up for 2 weeks.
Hang up on the guest, please. Bye-bye.
They brought it for 2 weeks, and then it was discontinued.
But that's like swearing on our show.
I didn't. That's very funny. That's our Rowdy in the Netherlands, of course.
Okay, hold on. First of all,
Bernstein's has to bring out the Illegal Curve sandwich after that.
Okay, yeah. First of all, Rowdy is the best. I know Rowdy's going to be listening to the show because we told him we were going to play the clip. Rowdy's the best. In case you don't know, he is our IC Dutch Jets fan, uh-huh, and won the Ezzy for our IC Dutch Fan of the Year because, uh-huh, we have many fans.
A hard fought battle.
We have many fans in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
So, first off, that was the best call ever. And, you know, Rich, if we want to go back to the Illegal Curve sandwich battle, you know, Gary has this revisionist history.
That's right. He does have a revisionist history.
He likes to say that, you know, the H&L, blah, blah, blah. We actually had Richie's mom leading the charge, and we actually had a counter up at Meyer's Deli. And the Illegal Curve sandwich, I believe, was beating the
2-1.
The H&L sandwich quite nicely there. And what happened was Gary got upset. And, you know, he talked to the fine folks at Harrison at Meyer's Deli, and he got the sandwich taken off the menu, which is fine. You know, we got a sandwich that's coming up at Bernstein's Deli. It's been in the works now for a couple of years, but, you know, let me tell you that when that sandwich comes out, it's going to change the deli game forever.
Excellent cutting.
And you know what? I even told Gary, I'd buy him a sandwich. I'll buy him a sandwich. And he can have one.
Gary's pretty excited about the sandwich. Gary's pretty pumped.
That's very good. I should make mention that this segment is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. That's very good. That was
Gary
a good
just,
call.
He gets so upset when you mention the illegal
sandwich. I think
sandwich.
He gets upset more than when you mention his name, I think is what the issue is. You mention his name and that's what gets him. That's what gets them riled up.
Ask
generally.
Maureen Pollock who had the better sandwich going when the illegal curve sandwich. And you know, Huss is saying that, you know, the McRib and all that. I mean, the legend of the illegal curve sandwich persists. You can actually, you know, still get it if you ask the right people.
But I've never had a McRib. You ever had a McRib?
Yeah, I've had a McRib.
Ezzy actually had hockey last week, had a McRib injury.
Oh, it was a McRib. He was eating a McRib and choked on it while skating. It's tragic when that happens. You know?
Not like if we're talking McDonald's, I miss the pizza a lot more than I miss the McRib or the Arch Deluxe.
I don't remember. I vaguely remember the Arch Deluxe.
Yeah,
I do. I like the pizza as well. Vancouver Canucks signed a couple players to contract extensions earlier today. The first is forward Derek Dorsett.
Before you break down the terms, Drew.
Before you break down the McRib.
Yeah, before you break down the contents of the Arch Deluxe, Drew.
Yeah.
Which I thought was your nickname. Odd timing for contract signings right before the playoffs. That shows you how probably uninvolved the players are in this negotiation, I would say. Just because, do you want to be worried about that when you're racing for the playoffs?
Probably not. It is a little odd. It's sort of a quiet time. Right after the trade, you know, within the last week of the season, it's sort of like, you know, there's not very many contract signings.
You don't usually have contract signings on teams that are heading to the playoffs. It's usually on teams, I'm not even sure if this happens, but you'd assume on teams that are like kind of out for you know, extending guys, but.
And Richie, it's only a few weeks after the Canucks signed Chris Tanev to the 5-year contract. Mm-hmm. So Jim Benning and Trevor Linden have been pretty busy.
He wants to take the summer off. What can you say? He wants to go to the lake or something.
I like the signings, Drew. I mean, you can go over the details here.
Let me go through the details. The first one, Derek Dorsett signs, that's a hard thing to say, a 4-year contract extension. It's $10.6 million, an average annual value of $2.65 million. And Lucas Spezza, defenseman, signs a 3-year contract extension. It's worth $10.8 million, a average annual value of $3.6 million per season. Go ahead.
Dorsett, you know, he's in his late 20s now. Dorsett was, you know, with the Blue Jackets and the Rangers before coming over to Vancouver. He played for the Medicine Hat Tigers, Willie Desjardins' former team. Dorsett is a guy, you know, he's never going to get crazy offensive totals, but he's a pretty good hockey player. And to me, he kind of reminds me of maybe a less offensively talented Brandon Morrow. He's just one of those guys, he's probably a third liner, you know, maybe on a better team he's a fourth liner, but the guy's really hard to play against. Talk about a hard worker. This guy's like your prototypical grinder that has a scoring touch. So I really like Dorsett, and obviously they like him too, and they signed him to a 4-year deal. Richie, Lucas Sabiza is a guy that I think, you know, his offensive totals aren't maybe what you expected when he was with the Ducks, and they haven't got there. I know he's only got a couple goals this year with the Anaheim Ducks, but he's a good skater, and he's a pretty solid defenseman. To me, you know, you get him, and he's kind of like a good above-average third-pairing defenseman. So I think these signings are good. I mean, like Vancouver, you know, you think about some of the youth they have with Bo Horvat and Jake Virtanen coming up. I think that, you know these signings are even though a guy like Chris Tanev, too, you could argue whether he's a first-pairing defenseman on a good team, I can see that they've signed their depth players here to kind of decent term, I should say, and I like the signings.
The Tanev deal we just talked about, that was great value. And when we're looking at these deals, I think of identity. We talked about to my colleague and about Pittsburgh's identity. These two players are physical.
Yep.
Lucas Spezza plays a pretty mean game.
Yep.
And Derek Dorsett is the identity guy.
Gets into trouble sometimes.
Yeah, but that's good, though. They want that. They were not difficult to play against. Jim Benning comes from Boston. Mm-hmm. Hard to play against. These two guys,
Beantown.
Same thing, and they're not costing you a ton of money.
That's it for this Wednesday evening and NHL midweek here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guests, Mike Colligan, Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent with thehockeywriters.com, and Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com. In case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes. Search for The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening to NHL Midweek. Until Saturday at 12 noon, we wish you good night and good luck.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.